The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Bag huge savings on your painting projects at Menards. From your kitchen and bath to doors and trim, and even your ceilings, Dutch Boy has the perfect choice for your painting projects. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a tough paint and primer that provides great scrub resistance and durability. DuraFighter interior paint starts at $27.75 a gallon. Get an additional 15% savings on all Dutch Boy paints when you put it in the bag. See store for complete details.
Save big money at
This is Lou Elizondo, and you are listening to That UFO Podcast.
I'd like to thank Paperlike for sponsoring this episode. Something that's always held me back from making more use of my Apple Pencil for notes is the feeling across the screen. It still felt like I'm writing on glass, especially when scribbling notes for podcast episodes. Paperlike have very much changed how I use my existing iPad, and it's giving it a new lease of life. Paperlike is perfect for anyone who draws and writes using an iPad and an Apple Pencil. The surface of the Paperlike is coated using nanodots, tiny microbeads that are designed to add superior stroke precision when you drag the Apple Pencil across the screen. Every Paperlike comes in a set of two, so you'll always have a spare in case you need. I'm no artist either, but my kids certainly approve of using it to draw and doodle, and I can have peace of mind the screen underneath is completely protected. To pick up your Paperlike, head over to paperlike.com/thatUFO, click Buy Paperlike and select your iPad size. From now until the end of January, Paperlike is also including their Digital Pro Planner Bundle at no extra cost, with every order placed through the Paperlike store. Plus, shipping is completely free. Ready to do more with your iPad? Then head over to paperlike.com/thatUFO to get started. Hi everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. My name is Andy, and I've got the first guest of 2023 on with me, feeling re-energised and happy to be back. I'd like to bring in UK-based investigator, researcher, and author of the ever-popular Truth Proof series. I've got Paul Sinclair on the podcast with me. Paul, welcome.
Andy, thank you. It's been a long time coming, and I'm really happy to be talking to you today.
It is, Paul. Paul was meant to be on last month, but just because of the excessive fee that he was asking for, we had to negotiate back and forward. And no, not at
all.
You
weren't supposed to tell him that.
No, that's it. Listen, life gets in the way, doesn't it? I'd just been on your podcast a few days before we were due to record, and that's festive correct. Period, things moving about. It's been delayed slightly, but I think good timing to kick off the new year, Paul, with the conversation as well, because I don't get enough UK-based folks on. So you, and genuinely, I don't just say this, whenever I've put out over the last year and a half, 2 years of asking for guest suggestions, your name comes up so often with people saying Paul Sinclair, and that's from both sides of the pond. That's, you know, from the US and the UK. So I was honored to be on your own podcast back in December 2022. I've put the link for that in the description if anyone wants to check it out, but I've already talked too much in a minute and a half, Paul. So listen, for any listeners unfamiliar with you and your work, can you tell us a little bit about your background?
My background, before writing the Truth Proof books, I've been a joiner from 16 to 48 years old. Packed in work after working with these all my life, and I'd always had the inclination that I'd write a book about unexplained phenomena due to things that happened to me in childhood. So it's always been there. You know, I mean, some people might think, oh, this guy's just appeared, but I haven't. I've been sort of researching and looking, if research is the word, Andy, but I've been looking into these things. I would have thought, as long as I can remember. So I wrote the first book, Truth Proof book, I think 2016, and I've done 5 books now, and that's that's it for books for now, because we're working on the documentaries. And it was just a combination of multi-phenomena research. That's another thing that I'm always keen to stress, that I'm not a UFO researcher, I'm not a cryptid researcher, poltergeist, ghosts. It's multi-phenomena. Because my own belief, it doesn't mean I'm right, but my own belief is all of this is linked in some inexplicable way, but it's linked, so even by location. Because as many times, as you'll know, with people that you've spoken to and work that you've done, you'll find that there'll be a UFO sighting, but if you look into the area, you find that there's an absolute multitude of other strange things happen, which probably go back decades and before. You know, just fascinating.
You've already touched on a few things I was going to get to in the next couple of questions, which is good. You've lined me up. You mentioned your own experiences going back. Would you like to touch on some of those? Like, do they go back as early as childhood?
Oh, gosh, yeah. That's where it came from. And I never really spoke about them till, I think, I was fortunate. I've been doing a lot of research back in 2002 to 2009 on what we called the Wolds light forms, these spheres of light that were appearing on the East Yorkshire Wolds. And this will relate to what your question in a moment. And I'd been putting it on the internet. And if you remember UFO Casebook and Brian Vike's UFO Reporting Centre back then, they were prominent sites. Well, Whitley Strieber had seen some of the stuff I'd been putting on, and he contacted me and said, would you like to speak on Dreamland about these UFOs, this footage that you've been taking? And I didn't feel ready to do that. However, when I wrote the first book, I'm thinking, right, I need to promote this. I need to get it out there. And I contacted him again, 2015. And he said, instantly, just, yeah, sure, you can speak about it. But we ended up speaking about my experiences as well. It was like cork coming off a bottle. My wife knows, my children know, my four girls, obviously they've two of them have had strange experiences. And I would have thought from 1967, I'm 60 years old, so I was born in 62, so I'd have been six years old, child don't keep a diary. And I always remember my dad, we lived at a place called Mexborough, Old Denneby, that overlooked a town of Mexborough. This is in South Yorkshire. And for any listeners overseas or out of area, there was a power station, Mexborough Power Station. My dad was pretty regimented. I had to go to bed at time, he said, whatever. Unusually, this night he woke me up and he wanted to show me this sphere of light about halfway up the power station, probably a little bit lower down, actually, the power station cooling towers. Huge sphere of sort of lemony white light that looked to be turning. And it went all the way along the rooftops of Mexborough and on towards Swinton. For me, I'm not saying that's where it started, but then I've got... I wrote a book called Night People, which is about my own experiences. And I've not got I haven't got an experience that starts at the beginning and I've got an ending. They're all cameos of memories. And that's as good as I can get. I've not tried to fill in the bits in between with what I think might have happened, because I haven't got a clue. But I can remember after looking at this sphere of light, and I don't mean the next night, how would a child remember, but I can remember sort of waking up, back bedroom in this house that overlooks pastures and cows grazing, and then the town of Mexborough about 3/4 of a mile in the distance. But I remember my curtains being shut and looking. And here's the thing, it's nighttime, so how can you even see these things? But it's as vivid today as it was then. And seeing what I perceived were cow's eyes in the curtains. And these curtains were a silvery blue colour. And if anybody remembers, and I'm showing my age here, but people used to buy fiberglass curtains. Seriously. And that my mum had got these all over blooming house. And I'm looking at these, and only thing a child can relate to, you're looking for something that you can identify to assign those eyes to. And I thought they looked like cow's eyes. They came out at curtains and they were beings. This is crazy, honestly. And on and off throughout childhood to being 14, 15 years old, I had this interaction with these things now, and it weren't nice. It were never good. Nothing good came out of it. And it sometimes, Andy, you wonder if everything's sort of pre-planned in a person's life, because there's loads of events during that childhood that happened, but then it just kind of stopped. Got married, four children moved to Bridlington in 1993, and it started instantly. I didn't start talking about it. This weren't something, oh, I'm going to start talking about this. The house I'm in now, which I've converted to flats, huge Victorian house, came up, started working on it with our eldest daughter. My wife, Mary, stayed at home. And within the first day, 2 days, it happened. And me and Sarah, we're upstairs. We're on the top floor of this huge Victorian house, big independent staircase that you can look over either side, 5 meter hallway, 3.5, 4 meters wide. Fabulous. And why, that'll become apparent in a moment why I've said that. I'm not just boasting about a staircase. This house were a wreck. Sure. This house were a wreck. We're on an old mattress at the top of the house. I'm trying to get, as a job as a joiner, I'm just trying to get it habitable. When I woke up at night, and picture a right angle, a corner, you've got a door there, and all the doors were painted with what's called wood grain. The staircase was mahogany, real mahogany, but the doors had got this wood grain. And it was dark. And I think I can see a figure stood, again, the door, and in this 2 foot recess before the spindles of the staircase, which I'm looking out onto. And it's unusual for me because I didn't get up and I'm looking at it and it's tall and I think it's got a hat on. And I'm watching it. And I remember turning round and looking at Sarah and she's asleep. I was awake. I'm not looking for somebody to tell me, you know, I dreamt this or were you doing drugs? Had you done alcohol? No, I hadn't. No, I love beer. I didn't have a beer then, though. I don't think I drank. But so to get to the point, suddenly I realised I'm looking at the spindles, you know, of the staircase and the white. And I'm thinking, we haven't painted them white. And all the stairs was an olive green. It's nighttime and I'm looking and they're getting brighter. They're getting brighter and brighter. I forgot about what I thought I was looking at in that corner, this alcove. And Sarah's asleep and I'm looking at these spindles and they're getting whiter and whiter. And then up from the middle of the stairs, this sounds bizarre, but there were beings, they were lifting. And it wasn't a nativity scene, but that's what it reminded me of. It weren't biblical. Do you know what I'm saying? They seemed to be glowing. They seemed to be glowing. And the spindles suddenly became like fluorescent tubes. They were that white. And then all of a sudden, bosh. It's white out. That's end of it. That's all I remember. And I woke up in the morning and I couldn't remember it. Set about doing a bit of work for the day, stretched my arms out, and I've got holes in my arms. I've got loads of them. All it looked like somebody had stuck hot matches all over. I mean, they're scarred now because over the years it got worse. And as soon as I've stretched my arms out and looked, it kind of came back to me. And that's all I remember. That's about the longest running memory that I've got, even from childhood, of that happening. Then throughout 1993 to 1998, it was intense. Woke up with 3 holes in my back after seeing them. And we've got the medical records, and I've not put them all in, night people, but I've put what I needed to put in, where the doctors are saying to skin specialists, we would like you to have a look. Young man, they called me then, obviously. We would like you to look at the punch hole lesions that keep appearing on this young man's body every 2 to 3 months. The doctors at the surgery are perplexed and quite baffled. And them's the words, and they're in the book, you know, and that's what they're saying. And they talk about them healing with giant foreign body cells as though there's been a surgical procedure done. Is there a history of trauma? And all sorts of things. I knew what was happening. I've sat there. And this is before, I became vocal about it. I didn't even speak about it, as I've said, until 2014, 2015 with To Whitley publicly. And I knew. And you think, how do you talk about this? It's a no-win situation. I've written Night People now. I've got it out of way. I'm pleased I've written it, and I'm going to speak about what we've called the Night People at the Awakening later this year. So that'll be the first time I've ever spoke about them, apart from on that Whitley Strieber show, and I'm talking to you a little bit now. And so it's been ongoing, basically. A long-winded answer to a short question.
No, but there's some fascinating stuff in there, and I appreciate anyone sharing any type of experience, especially like intimate ones where, you know, you're waking up with marks, and, you know, it's unexplained, and it's so many experiencers talk about those, not just incidents, but also them being uncomfortable, being difficult to live with. But then it's the going forward. How did you find living with those experiences not only reoccurring, but you're then seeking medical advice, which some experiencers don't, because they don't know where to turn? And then obviously there's the potential ridicule factor off the back of that as well.
Well, you're right, but I need to stress, Andy, from 96 to 98, they weren't just marks that healed. They've left scars, big white scars. And the ones in my back, I had to seek medical attention. I was really worried because I saw swirling lights in the bedroom, on the bedroom wall, and there's nothing at the back of this property. There's terraced houses, but the curtains are shut, but there's nothing there. It's quite a long garden. And I could see these lights, and then I could see them in the lights. Then all of a sudden, it felt like a corkscrew were turning in my back. Literally, that's what it felt like. And they're telling me it's a bed spring. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know how it happened, because I think I'm on my back. So how can they do anything to my back? I find that perplexing. I think I'm in bed. Mary's in bed at side of me. She's no idea, although she's woke up and seen mist in room and small beings once that she told me about. But the next morning, I sit up on side at bed, no clothes on, and Mary says to me, I don't believe it. She says, what, you've got three holes in your back? We're not talking marks, Andy. These were holes, you know. And so that's the reason I was seeking medical help. Perhaps 1996 to 98, but I daren't tell them because I just daren't. But when you apply for it, was Whitley again that said, apply for your medical record, see what they say, you might find it interesting. And they've done drawings. The doctor, I've took a picture, or my wife took a picture of the holes on my back, which we put in Night People, and the doctor, we didn't know, has done drawings, and they kind of match up. And do you know what I mean? So you've got three punch hole lesions that travel deep into the dermis. That's what they say about, they're thinking a medical procedure's been done. Well, I don't know what were done. All I know is that these things were telling me it were a bed spring turning in my back. That were about the end of it. 1998, it stopped. And
can I just ask, Paul? I hate interrupting, but I just want to get in at that point there. Because that conversation you've had with a doctor, you've taken those steps further to say, look, this is happening to me. I'm not just keeping it secret. I'm not keeping it to myself and my family. The doctor's looked at it. They're perplexed. They're saying that your skin, you know, the dermis, it's got its layers and it's gone. These holes are going down. Is that as far as it went? Was there any chance of following things up? Was there anyone who got in touch with you to look into this further?
Well, what they did, and they left it an open appointment. They tested me for everything. They could only find they were allergic to grass pollen. Seriously, they did. They just hadn't got a clue. And the last letter, and I'm sure we put it in there, says, I'm afraid we're going to have to, their words, draw blank with Mr. Sinclair's lesions. And that were the last, and we've left an open appointment should he need to come in and see us again. And I haven't done. I haven't needed to. It's, you know, for me, apart from seeing odd, strange things and odd things happening in the house, which I think everybody probably experiences, and most of the time it goes over people's heads because they're not actually looking for something, it stopped in 1998, and I'm really pleased it did.
So what was the moment for you that you decided to put this down on paper? And obviously this would be the Truth Proof series, you know, book one. What was that spark? Was it a day, a moment, or was it an accumulation?
Well, I didn't put Night People down on paper till probably 2020. Actually writing the first book. I don't know, I finished work, and I'm always keen to stress I don't have loads of money, but I'd worked hard and we'd sort of got ourselves into a position where I could finish work, and I wanted to just do this full time. I wanted to research full time, and over the years, I'd collected loads and loads of accounts, because the Truth Proof 1, 2, 3 and 4, there might be odd thing that I've witnessed with witnesses, but the books primarily, I would say 99.9% are about first-hand witness accounts. And I just wanted to get them down on paper and do the witness justice, because I get loads and loads of people sending me information, and some of it, not out of rudeness, I disregard because it's a friend of a friend told me, or it's a little bit vague, and you just get a feel for it not being right. But I like to meet the person face to face, go to the location whenever possible, and just spend some time just sort of winkling the story out to people. You know what I mean? It's full time. It's more than a normal 8-to-5 job kind of thing.
So the title of the book, I said to you before we recorded, is a Glaswegian's nightmare to pronounce. So the full title is Truth Proof, The Truth That Leaves No Proof. Now that sounds like something someone would ask me to repeat, you know, just for fun.
Will
be in the description.
It is, Andy, though, isn't it? It is a truth that leaves no proof, because whether you're a skeptic or whatever you want to term yourself as, I think the proof of what people are seeing and reporting is overwhelming, even if most of it is anecdotal. It's overwhelming, and there's so many repetitive patterns that come through within the accounts, and it's a diverse population, diverse religious beliefs, but fundamentally most of them are all reporting something very similar. There's a similar thread running through them, even stepping away from the UFOs and to the cryptids to other parts of the unexplained phenomena. We've got this strange, what I call the lower silence, this descent into this kind of disjointed reality when, not every time, but when quite a lot of the time, we're in a true event of unexplained phenomena, everything around you that changes. You know, it just becomes surreal. And I often wonder, I don't know whether that's the phenomena, we're in the phenomena's environment,
yep,
or whether the actual phenomena is placing that feeling on us. I don't know. I'm just sort of throwing hooks out and seeing what people think half of the time.
I'm going to be completely honest and admit that I do love a bit of cool technology, but not all the best tech is classified. So when BlendJet got in touch about their new BlendJet 2.0, I was very excited to try it out, especially as one of those protein shake people that many folks hate. Just shaking never has the same results as a blender does, let's be fair. BlendJet 2 is portable, so you can blend up a smoothie at work, a protein shake at the gym, or even a margarita on the beach. It's small enough to fit in a cup holder, but powerful enough to blast through tough ingredients like ice and frozen fruit with ease. BlendJet 2 is whisper quiet, so you can make your morning smoothie without waking up the whole house, a big one for me, folks, and it lasts for 15 or more blends and recharges quickly via USB-C. Best of all, BlendJet 2 cleans itself. Just blend with water, a drop of soap, and you're good to go. With over 30 colours available, there is something for everyone. Personally, I'm a huge fan of the carbon fibre. What are you waiting for? Go to blendjet.com and grab yours today, and be sure to use the promo code THATUFO12 to get 12% off your order and free 2-day shipping. No other portable blender on the market comes close to the quality, power, and innovation of the BlendJet 2. They guarantee you'll love it or your money back. Blend anytime, anywhere with the BlendJet 2 portable blender. Go to blendjet.com and use the code THATUFO12 to get 12% off, remember folks, and that free 2-day shipping. Shop today and get the best deal ever. You know, when I've heard about those sorts of moments, or, you know, things going quiet, you know, things just seeming off, sounding odd, it sounds like those places on Earth, like horrible places like Auschwitz, where something evil has happened and people report there's no birds for miles, you know, no animals round about. There's an odd feeling, an odd setting, as if there's a presence there. And that's what it sort of sounds like when people have these experiences. Is it, you know, time slowing down around them, like you say? Is it an effect that's being put upon the incident? No one actually knows, but there's an odd sensation, an odd feeling to that. Is that something you've experienced yourself, or something you've read more about or researched heard from others?
In the experiences in childhood, that's something I've experienced myself. And I've said, because you're not processing these things as a child, you don't even know that it's not normal. You just know that you're not really going to... My dad were ex-military, real regimented kind of guy who would hit first and ask questions later, which is totally opposite. I'm not like that at all. Do you know what I mean? I don't know whether that's made me that way, but, you know, we kind of don't take no nonsense, but we're not like he were. But where am I going with this? When you're experiencing, I mentioned him because I never spoke about it. I never even thought to bring what were happening in the night. And we're only in a 3-bedroom council house. We're not in some big rambling house. He's only in a wall with a 3x2 wall between us. Do you know what I'm saying? And plasterboard. Yeah. And I wouldn't have dared mention it. I just don't think I would have dared. But every night, when you've had something traumatic happen to you like that, and it doesn't have to be UFO alien related, something traumatic, and we don't even have to say the words, but there are things that happen. You're listening for it. You're watching for it all the time. You can't. But when it comes with this UFO phenomena, this alien type phenomena, it's happening and it's over before you've actually realized it's happened, because you're never, ever ready for it. Never. I thought every night as a child, because it didn't happen. Truth proof, I've just got, it's 20 events through childhood. So it's not every night. And they're all I can remember. But one of them is enough to make you be looking all the time and on edge all the time. But for some reason, you're in the moment and it's taken over before you even realise. And, you know, the event is over before you've realised that you've actually become absorbed into it. It's such a strange thing. I ain't got answers for it.
No, and many folks don't. We've got a lot of questions, but a lack of answers. You've mentioned through the book series, Till Night People, they're largely other people's accounts, the testimony, you know, the stories that people have experienced or seen. What did you start to learn as you put these books together and you've researched and spoken to hundreds of different people? Was there any common thread that would go through those experiences? Like you say, not just UFOs, but cryptids and other such things as well.
A common thread, I think, for a lot of places around the United Kingdom is location. If that's the kind of thing you're asking, I mean, there seems to be concentrated areas where more unexplained phenomena take place. I mean, I've had people ask me, you know, well, you're heavily involved in subject, Paul, and how come you're seeing stuff around Eastern North Yorkshire? I don't think it's because I'm heavily involved in it. I think that the location itself, you've only got to look, let's go back decade after decade, go back to folklore and go back, and it's all there. We know that stories may get embellished throughout time, and well, they will do, and folklore, but there's a grain of truth in these things. And what we've been doing with our documentary Wolfland and these self-illuminating eyes, if you go back in folklore, we've got phantom hounds with glowing eyes appearing on the cliff tops and appearing in the forests of North Yorkshire. Yet, present day, we're getting these things reported now. Do you know? And people—it's not people who are trying to make a name for themselves. I've had to really, pardon the pun, I've had to hound a lot of these people to get this information and get them to come on camera. And I applaud them. You know, to actually put these traumatic events, what they've experienced, and sit in front of a camera and talk to us. But I think it's a common, a lot of the common threads are there. You know, even by date, you know, for some reason, 15th of June and the month of June seems to throw up, particularly in Flamborough and Bempton, traumatic and strange events. And could be coincidence, Andy, you know, 15th of June, 1998, tornado ZE723 vanishes from radar 15 miles off Flamborough Head, which just happens to be an area where the magnetic anomaly is, where the fishermen experience lots of strange things. Not exactly, you know, but in that area, we can't say that's exactly where it is. At the time, I weren't researching it at the time, but the UFO investigators of the day thought this were UFO related. 15th of June 2020, the American Sea Eagle, F-15 Sea Eagle, vanishes, similar area, off Flamborough Head. 15th of June 2011, a few miles away, the Wallabies at Sobey, the Wallabies, we're going to something totally different, at Sobey Hall Zoo, were decapitated within their enclosures. I mean, it's a strange one, and it's I could actually talk for an hour, and I did on Midnight in the Desert just about the wallabies, because it was such a strange thing. There were a lot of animal mutilations in the month of June and just after June in and around this area. You started with one wallaby, and then if you look further, I probably never thought we were going to jump to wallabies, Andy. There you go, got a little joke in there, guys. But we never thought that. But what I'm saying is, if you look then, you find that wallabies, and please forgive me if I've got 2011 wrong and it were 9, but I think it were 11, but all over the United Kingdom, wallabies were being decapitated in small animal parks. How does that work? How does that add up? So then if you go further afield, you go to the Coffs Coast and you go to the Emerald Coast in Australia, those same months, wallabies were being decapitated. And, you know, I spoke to a professor, Allenby, I think it was at Warwick University. He were interested in the potential for ailing big cats to be at large in the United Kingdom. And I sent him this information about the wallabies, which he found fascinating. And the guy were really quite positive, but he believed it was a human thing. He thought that people were doing it, and it's sort of some kind of, I don't know, I wouldn't say a craze.
Like it caught on. Yeah, like, yeah. I know what you mean, though.
Which I believe is more preposterous. Copycat. Yeah, but I think that's, I don't think it's possible. I've seen speed these things move. So we've got, first, it brought to my attention with the wallabies at Sobey Hall Zoo. When I started looking further afield in the Cotswolds, Hanwell Bunny Park, all over the United Kingdom, similar time span, they're getting decapitated. It's crazy. Australia, they're getting decapitated. I know we've jumped about here, people, and I didn't, you didn't start with that question, but it led to it, Andy. I do apologise for talking about something you probably didn't want to talk about.
No, but it's linked, and that's really interesting, and it's something that you don't necessarily hear about. You know, wallabies, we're so used to cattle mutilations, you know.
Yeah.
Other animals, other species, most species we hear about have had these kind of incidents.
2017, I was contacted by a farmer. I went to speak to him. I asked, he agreed to let me look into the sheep mutilations that he'd been having on a farm not far from where I am now. And how did I get to know about this? I went to, they were a vagrant living in Danes Dyke. He'd been there. He left this year, actually. They rehomed him, but he'd been there 13 years. We took him some food. It was New Year's Day, 2017. And he told me that the police had just been to see him, and they'd asked him if he'd seen anything unusual, because an unusual dog has been seen killing sheep. And that's all he told me. So I did a bit of digging. I'd located the farm. I went and spoke to him. We can keep unexplained phenomena out of this. I'd love to look into it for you. So I spent 2 years on these fields and woodlands in between 4:30 and 5:30 in the morning, 3 or 4 days a week. Me and that little dog, and braver than meat dog, I think, Andy, you know. And he'd lost 28 sheep when he contacted me. And when it finished in 2019, he'd lost over 50 sheep. And I were finding them, and I were finding roe deer, I were finding badger and fox. Faces stripped of skin, in most cases, eyes removed. And why were I going at that time in the morning? Because of the people that say, well, crows will have took eyes. Other animals will have predated on them. That's why the... So I were getting there. In some cases, these animals were still warm. And I really were there at that time in the morning. Hundreds and hundreds of photographs of sheep with ears removed, eyes removed, front left leg for some reason, God knows why. And... when I first started talking to him, because I have my red book here. This is the book I had at the time. I don't use it now, but I had this book. And I write all sorts down. And I wrote down a guy called Peter who were walking on Cliff Lane, and he found a roe deer with a 3-inch hole through its side. We likened it to, you know, the hole on a boiler, a gas flue pipe. It looked like that had just gone straight through it. A lovely clean hole, if that can don't sound too sick. And... 28th of June, 2017. So I'm talking to this farmer, and I'm in his, he's come in, sat in his living room, and he's got his diary out, and he says to me, he said, I first realised something strange was happening. He said, because there were 400 sheep on this field. He says, I've two dogs, he says, and they hate going through these troughs to treat the feet. It must be something that's really painful. He said, and they know, like stings the feet, this liquid. He says, so we funnel them in. He says, and my two dogs struggle. He says, I get to the pens one morning. He's telling me this story. He said, and I can't believe what I'm looking at. He says, these corrugated run, which probably should take 6 to 7 sheep in length, and then they go through into other side. He said, it's got 30 sheep in it. Not 25, not 29, 30 sheep in it. He says, they're all piled on top of one another. They're hung over at sides. He says, and that's happened at night. He says, and I can't understand it. He says, so I unpeg these things. He says, we straighten sheep out. He says, there's 3 dead. Not through mutilation, just through heat exhaustion and fear. He said, and I said, what date was that? And he went, and let's have a look. He went, 28th of June. I says, wait there. And I opened this book up. I says, because I don't want you to see that I'm writing it afterwards. And I've got it down there, 28th of June, deer with 3-inch hole in its side, Cliff Lane, literally. I'm not going to say where because it'll locate the farm, but very close, very close. And there's something strange going on. Something really strange was happening. 2019, if we've got time, I'll just stay with this for a moment.
Yeah.
I did my usual. I got to fields early. I used to pull up. We had headlights on, so I didn't wake him up, farmer and his family. I were welcome there, but I didn't want to walk the field. It's just getting light. And there's 2 fields, and there's a fence between them, a big gate between them. And field sheep are in bottom field. Well, I open big gate, go through it, and I look upfield, and it's just grass. Sheep knew me. I'd been going up for years, and they didn't run away. They weren't bothered about my little dog. But there's nothing untoward. And I do like a grid of the field, drop into this wood, come out of the wood. Don't bother looking upfield. Come out, shut the gate. And as I shut the gate, I look. There's a lamb about size of a Labrador. It's not a fully grown ewe or ram. Laid there. I know it's dead. I thought it weren't there when I arrived, like 2 hours before, an hour and a half, 2 hours before. I knew instantly what it was. So I walked up to it. Now, what I should have said earlier was the farmer said to me, are you going to go up on, what day are you going up on field? I said, probably go up Tuesday or whatever. I've wrote about it in 2003. He says, well, I were up on Sunday. He says, I've lost one of my lambs. He says, and we'll call it number 53. They're all sprayed with a number.
Yeah.
And that might not be the number it was. Someone tells me it was 37. But anyway, he says, I've lost it. He says, I've been all around field in my 4x4. My dog's, I've walked field. He says, it's gone. I says, oh, I'm sorry to hear that, mate. And that was that. So that was Sunday. I'm there, I think, on Tuesday. Bearing in mind, it weren't there when I walked on field earlier and I walk off. So I walk up. I knew it were going to be that one. Looked at it. It's not bloated. It's not been opened up by any predators. Eyes are missing. Ears are missing. Front left leg's missing. Touched it. It's clap cold, but it's not swollen with gases inside it or like it's been dead a long time. So I rang him up. Said, what number was that lamb that you lost? And he went to, I said, number 53. And I said, it's here. I said, but it weren't here this morning when I arrived. And that, what is that? Have we got some human intervention? Because we're in the middle of nowhere, Andy. We're literally in the middle of nowhere. I'm on a private road. I've drove a mile to get to this farm up a private road. There's woods at the back. There's nothing. And that really, it's unnerving when something like that happens. It's like, well, that place there to make me realise, I don't know, is someone playing with us? I don't know.
A lot of that starts to, no, it's fascinating. A lot of that starts to sound like incidents we've heard happen in places like Skinwalker Ranch. You know, when you mention those sheep being stored almost in a very tight contained area, yeah, in a very unnatural way, that something had to have picked them up and placed them on top of each other.
28th of June.
You hear about those cows that were basically put inside a cabin, like a porta cabin in Skinwalker Ranch, and then they burst out of it. They were catatonic, apparently, when they were found. That's, like you say, why would someone, or how could someone even do that? It's a very difficult thing to do, isn't it?
He couldn't believe it, Andy. He just said, that's when I realised something strange were going on. Although then, and rightly so, we should all rationalise and look for what an earthly explanation, should we say. Because when I told him, he went, well, maybe a fox has brought it back. And I just thought it were a ridiculous thing to say because it hadn't been predated on apart from front left leg, which were gone. Do you know? And yeah, there are a lot of similarities to the things. I mean, I've spoke to George Knapp about this a few times, and there are a lot of similarities to the things that have been reported there, that are being reported, particularly at Bempton and Speeton. But I don't think these places are unique. I think that probably they probably need somebody looking at areas where things of an unexplained nature are happening with a lot of intensity, and I think you'd probably unearth a lot more stuff.
So the series itself, and we've touched on this, doesn't just look at UFOs. We talk about all sorts of high strangeness going throughout the series. Orbs, we mentioned missing people, night people. Have you always thought these phenomena were linked? I like your actual phrase,
multi-phenomena research. Yeah, and yeah. It's good. I wanted to coin myself that at the Awakening when I spoke last year, and it kind of stuck with it, because I think that's what we all ultimately ought to be striving towards, instead of pigeonholing ourselves and I'm a UFO researcher, I'm a cryptid researcher, because there's so much we could learn from each other. And I've lost the question. Give me what?
No, just about this being linked and it being, you know, multi-phenomena research.
It is ultimately linked. We might not know why. I do understand that. You know, on February the 7th, 2019, two military guys claimed to have seen something that we can only describe as a werewolf on the clifftops at Bempton. They were wild camping. They came across this thing. So they tell me. On February the 7th, we think it rolled into February the 8th. They arrived at 20, and they were in early hours at morning. And, what I find fascinating is that on February the 8th, 2020, myself, Bob Brown, and one of my daughters, Gemma, went to the clifftops. We didn't think, oh, we'll go on the anniversary of this happening. We're all us up there. Gemma, not particularly. She was staying with us for a few weeks. I was a Gemma now. She's 38, but it's in between moving, and she was staying with us. And it were a toss-up between sitting at home and watching TV soaps or coming and having a look at clifftops with me. So she thought she would. And that's what she did. She's not really into the subject as such. So anyway, February the 8th, this is a year later, or a year and a day, depending on what these military guys are, when they saw it, whether it were before 12 or after. Where am I going with it? So I'm setting a camera up on clifftops at a place called, I think it was Breel Nook. It's like a lookout in front of these 200 to 300 foot cliffs that were just sheer dropped at North Sea. And at the back of us, we've got this hill. And when I talked about areas, concentrated areas within the areas of high strangeness, this place is what I would call a concentrated area. And Gemma's got a big torch. She's picked up and she's shining it. And she says, "What's that white square there, Bob? I can hear them. It's just chatter to me. I'm setting a camera up." Bob went, "I think it's a board on a fence post." Well, Bob's been up here that many times, he instantly realised that there's no boards on fence posts. There's no fence. So he put his torch on it, and this white square literally dropped to the floor and disappeared. Doesn't sound like anything that conforms with unexplained phenomena, a white square. We immediately went to area. There was nothing there. Now, it doesn't finish there. We went home that night, and there's a because I've converted these flats, we've got like a little TV room, and then you've got a big living room and a hallway down to a big extension. Me and Mary go to bed. Gemma stays up watching TV. Behind the sofa where she's sat, and it's in like a little alcove, is a brick wall. And behind that is an hallway to our property, so there's nobody in the property. And there's another brick wall then behind that, and above is a flat which is unoccupied. Bob was in the top flat, but the middle one was unoccupied. I just need to stress this in case anybody thinks it's loud music. So Gemma said, "I'm watching TV, just got a little side light on, and I hear a noise, and I think it's thunder." And she said, "I turned TV down," she says, "and then I realized there's a growling behind me." And she said, "Daddy, it was so loud, it was kind of vibrating my insides." She says, "it absolutely frightened me to death." Now, anybody could say, well, that's his daughter. She's just telling him a story, or he's just saying this. I've wrote Night People. We've got four girls. The only person with nothing to say about any weird experiences throughout childhood and throughout adulthood and believe me, I'd have put it in night, people, is Gemma. That's the first thing she's ever come out with. Now, you touched on Skinwalker, and we talk about the phrase that they're keen to use. They're calling it the hitchhiker.
Effect.
Where people have been to the location and they're taking something of the phenomena back with them. And I'm wondering if that happened there. Do you know, there's a guy who comes in our live stream called Rob, and he went up to the old RAF base and he swears that happened to him there. You know, and I want to speak to Rob more. Like, his name in the chat in the live stream is Blue Shift. So if anybody wanted to ask him, just ask. It's not a secret. He's convinced that something came back with him when he went to Bempton and went up around the old RAF base, which I don't recommend anybody going on the RAF base, by the way, people. It's out of bounds, but he believes something came back with him. So I don't know where we're going with that one now, Andy.
No. You mentioned Hitchhiker Effect, and you've mentioned George Knapp. George Knapp has said he's had the same thing happen, and he's not went into detail with it, but he told me on the podcast I'd done with him last year or the year before, he's been on a few times, that his wife had effects from something coming back with him. Thomas Winterton, the ranch superintendent, has said the same thing. His family have had incidents happen back at their home, and then we've heard from Brandon Fugel and others that it's happened to countless officials and other people who have dealt with the property as well. And this must happen all around the planet. What I would like to know, and what I'm going to do, I'm going to wrap up here for part one, and part two will be released in a few days' time, folks. So if you hear the bell coming in a second or that UFO soundbite, thanks very much for listening to part one. Make sure you tune in again for part two. The question that's going to lead into part two, though, is, in this time, have you had, during your research, anyone in an official capacity, whether that was police, military, or government, get in touch with you about your research or what you were doing? That is all for this week's show. Thank you very much for listening. Please remember to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. You can like, retweet, and subscribe. That would all be very much appreciated. The shows are being uploaded onto YouTube as we speak more and more. You can sign up at patreon.com/thatufopodcast to access shows ad-free as well. Please get in touch on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, That UFO Podcast. Of course, on Twitter, it's @UFOUAPAM. And again, folks, as always, keep looking up. You never know what you might see.
It wasn't a tic-tac and not quite a saucer. More like a hubcap designed by Chaucer. A little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament Effect. The little fucker hovered right inside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he made it an issue. I don't think he expected me to see his ass, but I'd had some champagne and smoked a little grass.
The new Wegovy pill is now available through Weight Watchers. Powerful GLP-1 results in a simple pill at the lowest price available. And with Weight Watchers, you can get doctor support and personalized nutrition programs. See if you qualify at weightwatchers.com. Ad not reviewed or approved by Novo Nordisk. This is the new Weight Watchers. It works for members like JoJo, who's learning simple, healthy habits. Sharia, who's making progress with meds. And Kim, who still gets to eat what she loves. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Watch your life open up. Watch your story shift. Watch what you're capable of. Watch it work. Get started today at WeightWatchers.com.